From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Western Australian Senator Fatima Payman, a young Muslim woman, sent shockwaves through Labor when first she crossed the floor to vote for a Greens pro-Palestinian motion, and then she resigned from the Labor Party to sit on the crossbench. Anthony Albanese flagged that he saw the resignation coming, but nonetheless, it was a very rare and shattering event for Labor. It also came at a particularly bad time for the government when it wanted all the attention on the tax cuts and other cost of living measures. Senator Payman's defection, sparked by events in Gaza, comes as Muslims are organising to raise their voice at the next election, with Labor fearing their influence in Western Sydney and some Melbourne seats. Wins by several pro-Palestinian candidates in the British election have just heightened Labor's concerns. Today, we're joined by Senator Payman as our guest. Fatima Payman, there's been much speculation about when you actually decided to quit Labor. Can you clear that up for us? And secondly, when you look back in retrospect, do you think that after the events of last October, you were always going to be set on this path?
Thank you for the question, Michelle. Look, leaving the Labor Party or quitting was not on my mind until I was faced with the ultimatum last Wednesday. And when I say last Wednesday, it was more so during question time when the Prime Minister anticipated a decision was going to be made in the next few days. And so for me, I felt, yes, I had spoken to the Prime Minister the Sunday prior after doing the Insiders program interview, and then to be told at the lodge that, you know, you either conform with party discipline and toe the line, or you resign as a Labor senator completely, and Labor would have a casual vacancy and, you know, give that seat to somebody who would do as they're told on everything. For me, even until that moment, I thought I can continue making change internally. For me, it was about I'm following the party platform. And I'm not sure if you or your viewers have actually seen the pledge that we sign, but I'll read it out. And it says, "The Australian Labor Party's caucus commitment is, I hereby pledge myself not to oppose the candidates selected by the recognised political labour organisation, and if elected, do my utmost to carry out the principles embodied in Federal Labor platform and on all questions affecting that platform to vote as a majority of the parliamentary party may decide at a duly constituted caucus meeting." Now, I don't think that as a caucus we held true to doing our utmost best to carry out those principles in our party platform. And until that time, until Thursday morning, and I know I'm throwing quite a lot of dates, but Thursday morning, 4th of July, in that morning, I made the decision that I'm going to leave the Labor Party and sit on the crossbench as an independent for the remainder of my term, and see what happens moving forward from then on. But I always had faith that, yes, internally, by agitating and doing what I was doing and talking to my colleagues and the relevant ministers, that I could sway the party to really hold truth to what the platform said. So I didn't want to quit just because we thought there was a disagreement. I felt that the party platform was, that guiding book, essentially, or what rank and file members, unionists, lifelong members come together, we debate, and we make sure that what's in our platform is the ideals that we hold on to and that we carry. And I guess the second part of your question about whether the Middle East conflict that erupted last October, that alluded to me defecting or leaving the party, I didn't think so because I understood our platform to be very clear. And understanding that the conflict didn't begin on 7th of October, that timeline needs to encapsulate the last 75 years as well. And the advocates from, you know, Gough Whitlam to Bob Hawke to Paul Keating, all those big labor giants who have been so outspoken on Palestinians' right to self-determination and statehood, and knowing that the Prime Minister himself has advocated for longer than I've been around, for me, I felt like this is the best time. Like, we've come from opposition into government, we're progressive, we've got our party platform in order, we know what our constituents and rank and file members want from us. So I did not see it as a recipe for disaster.
So the government has been saying, certainly just before you resigned and just after, that there wasn't all that much difference between its policy and where you stand. But what do you think now the government should be doing in terms of this conflict that it's not doing?
Well, firstly, I also support a two-state solution, but you can't acknowledge that but not recognize one of those two states. So for me, recognizing the state of Palestine is paramount, and I think because it's in our platform, we should be able to do it.
Now, you mean? Immediately.
Yes, absolutely. Because the peace process, I mean, we know where Benjamin Netanyahu sits on a two-state solution. He doesn't even want to think about Palestine being its own state. So he's very far off the spectrum towards that peace process. So when we keep saying that the recognition will take place as part of a peace process towards a two-state solution, when is that peace process going to begin? Because already 40,000 people have been massacred, almost 20,000 of those casualties are children. Like, this needs to stop now. And I know that by recognizing Palestine, it's not going to stop the war, but it is a paramount step towards putting that pressure on Israel. And we, as Australia, as a middle power, can be that the leader in our region to encourage other like-minded nations who are in similar standing to us to also take that lead and join the majority of the countries that have already recognised Palestine.
The Greens have indicated that during the next parliamentary sitting, they plan to move a motion calling on the government to sanction Israel. Will you be voting for that?
Look, I'll have to look at the motion before I make a decision on what I would vote. Obviously, the wording's important, the implications, and so I look forward to reading the motion and then deciding afterwards.
Are you getting expressions from within Labor for your of support for your stand, and what sort of people, sections of the party, is that coming from?
It's been such an overwhelming amount of support from rank and file members. The invitation I'd received from Young Labor from New South Wales a few weeks ago, but they'd still advertised it as me attending, so that was quite heartwarming. But, you know, I was like, guys, I can't attend. I'm no longer a Labor senator. But rank and file members, Young Labor crew that I've worked with previously, sending me a message of solidarity from my former caucus. Yes, there's been people who were elected with me in 2022, and we'd formed great friendships. So they've reached out just saying that, you know, we can still be friends, and how heartbroken they are. And I've told them that I hate that it's ended this way, but I had to follow my conscience and, you know, hold on to the strength of my convictions. So, and they respect that. So it's been good. But I, again, never expected so many people on the ground, people I'd never met, to reach out, send me beautiful postcards, letters of support, emails of support. So it's really heartwarming to see that.
As a crossbencher and leaving aside the Palestinian issue, do you expect that you'll be voting mostly with Labor in coming months?
Look, again, we'll have to see what piece of legislation will be brought forward. And I had a chat with the Senate clerks yesterday, and it's going to be quite challenging and an interesting new chapter in my life, because obviously I'll have to go through each piece of legislation, understand how it's going to impact West Australians, make sure that I know what West Australians need from me as their independent voice in Canberra, and then moving forward, make those big decisions. It's no longer just following what the whip or the caucus decide as a whole. So it's going to be challenging, but I'll have to see what legislation comes forward before I make a decision on how I'll be voting.
That is a big challenge, and you've been thrown into having to reorganise yourself totally. Can you explain a bit what you're doing? Are you changing policy staff? What's happening? How many staff do you have?
Great question. It's been, yeah, definitely a lot of the unlearning needs to happen. So the way I've learnt things to do as a government senator, now I've got to unlearn and relearn the new life of an independent senator. So with my staff, I don't exactly know how many I will be receiving. So I understand that usually we receive five full-time elector officers and potentially one or two personal staff. I haven't been given any direction as yet on what that's going to look like, but with my existing staff, four have decided to move on. I have one full-timer and one part-timer left at the moment, so I'll be advertising for all those positions. Yeah, so basically getting over the next few weeks before I go back to Canberra, I look forward to organising my team, having lots of interviews, making sure that people with the similar visions as me are able to join my team. And I'll also be getting a better understanding of how processes and procedurally things will operate. I'm yet to have conversations with my crossbench colleagues to get some tips and tricks from them. They've all been very generous, offering their time and saying that they're available to have a chat. So I'll be reaching out and having those conversations. I will also try getting my head wrapped around what piece of legislation will be coming up in the August sitting fortnight. So it's a busy time, but I'm really excited. And amidst all this, I also do want to visit as many towns and localities here in WA to talk to people, to find out what they want from their independent voice. WA hasn't had one, from what I've looked into, for a while. So having an independent senator for such a big state is an honour, but it's going to be challenging as well. But I'm looking forward to this incredibly new chapter.
Let's turn to talking about the Muslim vote. There's been a lot of speculation about this. Do you think that vote will pose a threat to Labor at the election in certain seats?
Look, I don't know what the Muslim vote sort of their strategy is. I'm not affiliated with them, so I don't want to speak on their behalf. It's not my position to, but from what I've been hearing and the meeting that I had that one time, it really, there is overwhelming amount of dissatisfaction and discontentment within the voter base. And that community is no longer just, I know that they call themselves the Muslim vote, but I think the communities they represent are not just limited to the Muslim community and society. It extends beyond that. And so, yes, there is a lot of discontentment about how Labor has conducted themselves and managed the whole issue and the genocide taking place in Palestine. It's really going to be interesting, especially knowing what happened during the UK elections, to see how, you know, if there's going to be any semblance of what happened there for it to be mirrored here. But I know that, yeah, people wanted to see more from a Labour government and they are quite disappointed. So, you know, when I was making a lot of ruckus and noise, you know, behind the scenes, talking to colleagues, literally telling them that we're bleeding votes, we are ending up with, you know, this is going to impact us electorally, people are not happy with us. And I felt like it went on deaf ears. So it's going to be interesting to see what plays out. I don't know how organized this organization or community of people are. But yeah, people are not happy with the Labour government.
Well, a couple of groups have come to the fore recently, one called the Muslim Vote and another one also, Muslim Votes Matter. Do you think that over coming months we are going to see a Muslim political party formed running its own candidates, or do you think these particular groups or any others are just going to throw their weight behind independent Muslim candidates in some of those Labor seats in Western, Southwestern Sydney?
Look, I can't speculate what they plan on doing and not doing. But what I can say is I don't think it would be wise to have a Muslim party. And so if I was to advise them, I'd say don't establish a Muslim party because you need to look at your broader base. You know, for example, I know that different state demographics vary, and some may have a larger proportion of a particular demographic, but I just don't think that would be conducive to the way things function in our democratic system. But also, whether they choose to go down that route, that's their prerogative. I just think that ensuring that, you know, community voices are heard and representative of modern day Australia, because we come from all walks of life, all backgrounds, all belief systems, all colours and creeds and you name it, it's really important for us to be representative. So, yeah, if I was to advise whoever wants to start a party out there, you know, think about the bigger picture, think about Australia as a whole, think about how we look so different to what we did even 30 years ago. And we're going to keep evolving into this melting pot of incredible cultures and, you know, identities and belief systems. And I think that's just beautiful.
So do you agree with the Prime Minister's point that faith-based parties are not a good idea, or what other reasons are there for not forming this sort of party?
Look, I think there's been faith-based parties previously, and I think the angle that they've taken to sort of instill fear is incorrect. It's not going to challenge social cohesion, I'd say. Like, people are free to do what they want to do and what parties they want to set up. You know, there's the fishers and farmers and all sorts of parties out there. So if people want to go down this route, they can. But it's incorrect to say that this Muslim, to sort of not just politicize the Muslim faith, but also to make it seem like they're a threat to social cohesion, or it's going to impact the way we politically engage. I think what the Muslim vote do on the ground, where they're educating the community about their rights to vote.
We're talking about the group here called the Muslim Vote.
Yeah. So I kind of use that, and I think it's Muslim Vote Matters. I actually don't know the distinction between them. I kind of see them as the one group. But from my understanding, they are going out there educating people about their right, their political right to vote, and how to use it effectively, and how to understand the political system, bearing in mind that a lot of multicultural communities out there have come from countries where democratic ways of governing is not established or is not a thing. And so for them, voting can be quite an alien concept. And so education is paramount to these communities to know that they've got, as citizens of this multicultural country, they have the right to voice their concerns, to voice their opinions. And if they think that their elected members or incumbent members are not doing a great job representing their voice, they can use the elections as a way of sending a message to their local representative. So I'm not here to say that it's a good idea or a bad idea necessarily. I wouldn't, if I was setting it up, if I was setting a party, I would not set up a Muslim-only party. I see the bigger picture of my constituency in Western Australia and know that I represent people from all walks of life who can have be passionate about issues that are important to many people. And the genocide in Palestine is not the only thing that I'm focused on. And that's why it's important for me to immerse myself within the broader West Australian community to understand what are things that are important to them.
Do you think that talking about Muslim voters generally, apart from the Middle East issue, they are unhappy at the moment about other things specific to their community? Or do you think that they're just primarily focused on cost of living and the sort of issues that the general community is feeling angst about at the moment?
Yeah, I think it would be I don't want to isolate the Muslim community and think, you know, that they have any specific issues. Like, yes, the discrimination, marginalization happens across the board. But yes, cost of living, housing, the fact that, yes, they feel very unheard in the Palestine, you know, genocide that's taking place, and they feel like their queries are not addressed, that their community have, you know, they've been marginalized. But again, that sentiment goes across many communities out there and is felt widely. I would say that, yeah, they have very similar issues to every other Australian.
Now, you're not up for re-election next year. You've still got a whole term ahead of you after the election. And from what you say, you don't see yourself as playing a major role in mobilising the Muslim vote at the next election. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I mean, at this stage, I have not made any such decision to be mobilising on the ground for the upcoming election. I mean, you know, I don't even know when the next election is. But yeah, I don't intend on doing that. But more power and strength to as many communities out there who want their voices heard.
You did leave a tantalizing a suggestion at the end, or question mark or whatever, of your press conference the other day about forming a political party yourself. Was that just a throwaway line or something more?
I mean, I think for me it was anything can happen, and I don't want to commit myself to doing something or not doing something. So what I've learned in the last 2 years is whatever you say will come around, and even if there's differences in the way you've thought or the way you've conducted yourself. So it's an open space. I haven't thought about setting up a party at this stage, but I'm not going to rule it out. Like, if it happens, it happens.
But it wouldn't be a Muslim party.
No, no. And at the press conference, I actually did find it offensive that, you know, there was a journal, I don't remember who he was, but just because I'm a visibly looking Muslim, it doesn't mean that that's the only community that I focus on and that I will serve and that I represent. This question would probably not be asked of a middle-aged Anglo-Saxon male politician. You know, are you going to form a Christian party, an Anglican party? You know, I am a devout Muslim. That's personal and private to me. I try praying 5 times a day, and I do rely on spiritual guidance. But that's for me, and that's personal. When I'm serving the best interests of West Australians, I'll be talking to people. I'll be on the ground. I will listen to their concerns and be their voice in Canberra. And whether that's through a party or me as an independent, paramount for me to make it clear to everyone that no, I will not be forming a Muslim-only party, because I represent voices from all backgrounds, people from all walks of life here in WA. And if there are communities across, you know, the East Coast that feel like their story resonates with me and they look up to me, like, that's very humbling and I'm absolutely honoured. But my first priority is going to be Western Australia.
Now, just finally, yesterday we saw the appointment of a special envoy to combat anti-Semitism, and there's going to be a similar envoy for combating Islamophobia. This conflict has traumatised so many people in Australia on both sides. What would be your message to Jewish Australia?
To all the Jewish Australians, you deserve to feel safe and secure just like every other Australian, whether they be Muslim or a person of another faith. The criticism that the Israeli government is receiving is not an attack on the Jewish community and should not be an attack on the Jewish community here in Australia and abroad. And I'm very hopeful that in the time to come, there being a ceasefire, to be able to see Israelis and Palestinians be able to live side by side within their own recognized borders, their own states, their own freedoms and liberties. And hopefully that will ease the tensions here in Australia, because I believe that we can live in a harmonious society with our differences, but focusing more on what brings us together and what the common denominator is here in Australia. And that's that we're all proud Australians.
Fatima Payman, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us today. You've obviously got a lot of work ahead in your new role as a Senate crossbencher. That's all for today's Conversation Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Ben Roper. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.